Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levenier, with you for an hour of variety. Later on, we hear command performance from the Armed Forces Radio Service when the troops needed it most in 1942. Right now, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time from July 10th, 1947 on NBC. We'll hear a medley of Rodgers and Hart songs, also the talents of Earl Ross, Sam Edwards, and the Dick Davis Chorus with our hostess, Frances Langford.
Good evening, friends. This is Frances Langford bringing you a part of the American scene, Maxwell House Coffee Time. May we come in?
It's Maxwell House Coffee Time, brought to you each week by Maxwell House, the coffee that's bought and enjoyed by more people than any other brand of coffee in the world at any price. So have another cup of coffee and listen to 30 minutes of words and music and reminiscence. The voice of Eloise, the Maxwell House Orchestra and Choir, under the baton of Carmen Dragon, this is Toby Reed, and here is your hostess, Frances Langford.
That I'll go where you go. I choose you, won't lose you. I wish you knew how much I long to hold you in my arms. This time is my time, will soon be goodbye time. Then in the starlight, hold me tight with one more little kiss, say 99.
Frances, would you ever consider coming on the air with a slow, dreamy song that would put your audience in a romantic mood?
I'd be afraid to, Toby. Might put you to sleep.
You know, I'd like to be sleeping right now.
You know, I don't doubt it.
Well, I'd like to be stretched out on a South Sea Island beach with native girls fanning me.
Oh, brother.
And I'd like a great big moon to look at and someone like you to sing to me.
A song about the islands, doubtless.
Doubtless indeed. Do you know what I mean, Carmen? Yeah, that's what I mean. Sing to me, Frances.
The moon of Malacca fills the night with magic Polynesian charm. The moon of Malacca. And brought you to my eager arms.
Again above the island shore.
Then I'll behold it in dusky eyes, and you'll be in my arms once more.
Moon of Monocura, very soothing.
Well, prepare yourself for a jolt, man, because one's coming.
Are we going to get active again?
We've got to accelerate, Toby. Stop thinking largo, think allegro.
You know, no one but the musicians are going to understand you.
Largo is slow, languid, beautiful.
Ah.
Allegro is fast, bright, and quick.
I was afraid of that.
Our next number is definitely in the allegro tempo. It's a 1947 hillbilly rumpus called Feudin' and Fightin', and Carmen Dragon, the orchestra, and the choir are going to shoot it out. Stand back, everyone.
because here they come.
Peeled in and flushing and a-biting. Sometimes it gets to be exciting. The like and watery neighbors down by the creek will be some other neighbors next week. Grandma, poor old grandma, why they have to shoot for grandma? She lies neath the clover. Someone caught her bending over. Picking up a daisy. Picking up a daisy. Feeling and fussing and a fighting. This is a wrong that needs a righting. Let's get the funeral service over so then we can start in a feuding again. Daughter, baby daughter, poisoned all the neighbor's chicken. Daughter, run like the Dickens. They hit her with a shovel. They hit her with a shovel. Building and fussing and fighting. No use of standing here and cussing. Let's give that daughter a pistol now that she's for a candle.
This song is for you if your world is narrowed down to one person. It's for you if your dreams reach the height of a cottage and the breadth of a garden. It's for you if you can think of the future only in terms of the plural, never in the singular. It's for you if you've reached a state of heart where every love song seems to have been written for you.
There is no greater love than what I feel. No greater love, no heart so true. There is no greater thrill than what you bring to me. No sweeter song than what you sing.
The American scene is many different things. It's the barefooted kid walking down a country road with a fishing pole over his shoulder. And it's the girl curled up in a hammock reading The Wizard of Oz. It's these days when the relatives are liable to come to visit or to park their kids while they take a vacation.
Francis, let's have a barbecue.
I think a barbecue stinks.
Turnip.
It isn't fair. I tell you, it isn't fair that we should have him on our hands and have cousins coming, too.
They're not here yet.
Well, I wanted to have a barbecue.
Well, let's have one. Can you barbecue a steak?
Can I barbecue a steak? I'll have you know I've barbecued more steaks than people have ever eaten.
You can say that again.
I'll have you know I've barbecued... You keep out of this!
Temper, temper.
Turnip, be still.
I never had to be still at home.
Turnip. Isn't that a ridiculous nickname for a child?
What did they call you?
They called me? Never you mind. Are you sure these people who are coming are legitimate cousins, Francis?
I guess so. Why?
We get so many letters every summer from people claiming to be cousins, some of them have to be imposters. I only had two uncles, and they couldn't possibly have been that prolific.
What's prolific?
Huh?
What's prolific?
Never you mind. You'll know soon enough. When are they coming?
They said they'd let us know.
I'll bet they stink.
Turnip, you're not to use that word.
Holly uses it.
Holly's being very naughty when she does. It's not a nice word for a little girl.
But I'm a little boy.
It's not nice for a little boy either.
Why?
It just isn't.
Why?
Because I say so.
Why?
You know he can keep that up as long as you can.
I don't like you.
Why?
I don't know. It must be your face.
What's wrong with my face?
It doesn't look like a face.
Oh, it doesn't.
Uncle Frank, does God love everybody?
Yes, everybody.
Even you?
Why, you...
Pop, he's only a baby.
Baby, nothing. He's a monster. I don't know why they ever gave him a nickname like Turnip. That's a terrible thing to do to a vegetable.
Hey, anybody out there?
Hello, Toby.
Hi, Toby.
Hi.
Hey, I've got something on I want you to meet here. This is my new neighbor, Common Dragon.
Hello.
You look up at the new neighbor and you think to yourself, well, things are picking up around here. And he smiles at you, the kind of smile that flops your heart over like a pancake turner. And you think, and you wonder what he's thinking.
You stand there meeting the people and you think to yourself, I wonder how soon I can get out of here. I'm hungry.
But Carmen's new in town, and I thought I'd show him around.
Oh, well, we'd be delighted to show him around, too, wouldn't we, Pop?
Say no, Uncle Frank. The guy's a dope.
Turnip. Children can be such a trial, can't they?
Especially when they grow up into people.
I like children myself.
You do? Oh, that's wonderful. It's nice to meet a man that likes children.
I like children.
I don't.
I don't blame you.
What?
Now, you take most men. Most men would have been very angry at Turnip for saying that. But you have understanding. Oh, it's wonderful to have understanding.
Isn't that disgusting?
When you're my age, you'll think it's charming.
Are you going to be with us all summer, Mr. Dragon?
Well, it looks that way.
Well, I hope we'll be seeing a lot of you.
Yes, both of us. Francis and I are practically engaged.
Of course, it's only practically. You look up at the new man and you think to yourself, I can't imagine why I was in such a hurry to get married.
Of course, practically is pretty definitely.
Well, congratulations. I can see you're a lucky man.
You think to yourself, darn Toby anyhow. You think that practically was positively.
Well, I think we'd better be running along.
Oh, surely not so soon. Won't you sit down, Mr. Dragon?
You don't have time to sit down, do you, Carmen?
You take a good look at the girl, and she's aiming a smile at you that goes straight for its target and quivers there. You know you should get out, and quick. But you don't seem to have the locomotion to do it. And you find yourself thinking, hey, this is for me. So you say, oh, I have plenty of time.
Don't you have to get back to work, Toby?
No. Attaboy, Toby. Never retreat. Never retreat under fire.
You're a coward. You usually live longer.
You know, I'd almost forgotten you were here. It was a lovely feeling.
I've got a feeling I'm going to like this town.
I hope so.
What do you do, Mr. Dragon? Are you a professional man?
I think so. I'm a musician.
Oh.
Long hair or short?
Well, that depends on whether I'm working.
Musicians never work very steadily, do they?
Well, any theatrical job has its ups and downs.
He'd be a poor risk, Francis. Turnip.
I worked steadily. My job may not be glamorous, but it's very steady.
I think there's a lot to be said for a glamorous job.
Oh, you do. Francis, I must say that you seem very unstable today.
You do. Carmen, we're having a barbecue tonight. Wouldn't you like to come?
You think to yourself, a barbecue. Oh, brother, how I hate those burnt steaks and warm potato salad. But she smiles at you again, and you're dead. Thanks, I'd love to.
It's a shame you don't like barbecues, Toby.
I love barbecues.
Why, Toby Root, you know very well that every time we talk about having one, you carry on something awful.
Well, I've changed in the last few minutes.
You look at Toby, and all of a sudden it hits you, and you think, why, he's jealous. Bless his little green heart, he really is.
What are you looking so grim about, Toby? Where's your sense of humor?
You ought to know. You destroyed it.
Son, there's bad news tonight.
Is this a kid or a commentator?
Turnip can be very frightening, can't he?
I'll say.
Wait until you see him when he wears both his heads.
So you have a barbecue. How are you doing, Pop?
Confounded smoke. Something's wrong with the wood.
No, it isn't. You just put too much on.
Oh, mind your own wood.
Take some off.
If you don't shut up, something else is going to be burning around here.
You planning on going up in smoke, too?
Francis, where are the steaks?
Right here, Pop.
All right, I'll slap them on.
You're supposed to put salt and pepper and butter on first.
Would you like to fix these steaks?
Sure.
Francis, will you shut that child up in a cage someplace? It takes concentration to do a thing like this.
You're burning the steak.
Francis!
How you doing, Mr. Hogg? You need any help?
No.
You should put salt and pepper and butter on those steaks first, you know.
I belong to the olive oil school myself.
Olive oil stinks.
You're not supposed to use it for perfume.
How are the steaks doing?
I haven't asked him lately.
Hey, aren't you going to put salt and pepper and butter on them?
This coaching from the sidelines has got to stop. How can a man concentrate on his work?
Hey, the fire's too high. Those steaks are going to catch fire.
Are you inferring that I don't know how to manage a fire?
Those steaks are going to catch on fire, Mr. Hall.
They sure are.
They are not.
Pop, don't poke the fire like that.
There go the steaks.
I know an awfully good... I know an awfully good restaurant down the road. Awfully good.
So you all go down to the awfully good restaurant down the road. You sit there, and nobody says very much.
It really wasn't your fault, Uncle Frank. The wood was no good. Olive oil is lots better than salt and pepper and butter.
Yeah.
I wasn't in much of a mood for steaks today anyhow.
No, neither was I.
Well, there'll be another Sunday, won't there, Francis?
Yes, of course there'll be another Sunday.
I thought I knew it all, didn't I? I couldn't listen. No, not me. You know something? There was too much wood on the fire, and I did poke it too much, and you should put salt and pepper and butter on. But you never can tell your old man, can you, Francis? He always has to find out for himself.
You were magnificent through the whole thing, Pop.
A magnificent fool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't have to agree with that.
Yes, I do.
And suddenly you all start to laugh. You laugh until your sides ache, and you think, there's a spirit that's a wonderful part of the American scene. That spirit that makes a man able to laugh at himself when he skids on a banana peel or burns the steaks. And you think, there'll be other barbecues, lots of them, because summer barbecues and the fun and laughs that go with them are a wonderful, light-hearted part of the backyards and patios and gardens on the American scene.
Barbecue, a hot dog, barbecue, a steak, in the good old American way.
A barbecue at home. Yes, it's a great time of year for backyard cooking, Francis.
And if I know my backyard cooks, right along with the main dish, there'll be the tantalizing aroma of coffee, Toby.
Meaning Maxwell House, of course.
They were kids kids when they first hung out their musical shingle together in 1920. But from then on, their place on the American scene was assured. Over 20 years of music came between the first curtain and the last of their collaboration. Hundreds of hits bearing those magical words, lyrics by Lorenz Hart, music by Richard Rodgers. And now Carmen Dragon, Eloise, the choir and I would like to bring you some of this music. Messieurs?
Oui, oui.
S'il vous plaît?
Oui, 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 oui.
Merci.
You funny little good-for-nothing Mimi. Am I the guy, Mimi? You sunny little honey of a Mimi. I'm even high, Mimi. You've got me sad and dreamy. You'd be creamy if you see me, Mimi. You know I'd like to have a little son of a Mimi by and by. Won't you meet me by and by? Won't you, huh? Won't you, huh? Won't you meet me by and by? Won't you meet me by and by?
With a song in my heart, I behold your adorable face. Just a song at the start, but it soon is a hymn to your grace. When the music swells, I'm touching. Softly in my ear you breathe a flame.
Francis Langford inviting you to be with us again next week at Maxwell House Coffee Time. We'll have more words and music for you, so we hope you'll join us over your Maxwell House coffee cups. And for Eloise, Carmen Dragon, Toby Reed, the orchestra, the choir, and myself, good night.
And now until next Thursday, good night and good luck from the makers of Maxwell House, America's number one preferred brand of coffee. Always good to the last drop. Now stay tuned in for Kraft Music Hall, which follows immediately over most of these stations.
Maxwell House Coffee Time from July 10th, 1947 on NBC. This is Tuned to Yesterday, delivering the radio variety show. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. We move on now to the Armed Forces Radio Service production of Command Performance from May 7th, 1942. And I found it interesting in previewing this broadcast that at the time, censorship was not only rife and expected, but enforced during radio's golden era, that is, on American radio. For the Armed Forces Radio Service, it wasn't necessarily a case of anything goes, but we will hear the H-word twice in this broadcast, most likely to have the soldiers listening to the program feel a bit more comfortable and a bit more down-to-earth as they were waiting to go into or reflecting on battle. This episode from May 7th, 1942, the United States had not been in the Second World War for a year yet, and their 12th program from Armed Forces Radio, The Talents of the Jack Benny Cast, comedians Robert Benchley and Judy Canova, and Betty Grable as MC.
Performance USA, the greatest entertainers in America, as requested by you, the fighting men of the United States Armed Forces throughout the world.
Command Performance!
Presented this week and every week till it's over, over there. Get on the beam there, men. Here comes your personal radio show, Command Performance. Our opening letter is from Seaman First Class BRJ on a battleship somewhere in the South Pacific. He says,
Dear Command Performance, maybe I'm just an old deck swabber, but I've got a lot of young ideas. One of them's Betty Grable. I happened to read in the last Walter Winchell column I saw that Betty was keeping company with George Raft. Please tell Betty that we've got a nice big battleship. Why should she waste her time with a raft?
Brother, you've got something there, and we've got something here, too. She's yours for tonight. Fellas, Miss Betty Grable.
Thank you, Paul Douglas, and hello there, fellas. I told Mama not to wait up tonight because I'm going out shortwave. I'm going out with all the fighting men in Uncle Sam's Army, Navy, Marines, and Coast Guard. And that's just about the biggest blind date any girl ever had. And I don't mind telling you boys that I'm carrying the torch for you. And so is that lady in the harbor back in New York. The studio here is so full of stars we could almost get along without lights. So I'd better start answering your commands. First, a salute to the boys of Unit 855, United States Marine Corps. The address is a military secret, but the letter is signed by M.D.G. Jr., who hails from Culpeper, Virginia. For him and his gang, we proudly present Miss Judy Canova.
Hi, everybody. Hello, boys everywhere. Here's a song from me to you, and I hope you like it.
I had a feller courting me for quite a spell, mid simple life of country folk. Now, when he told me that he wanted to go away, my little heart hit almost through. I said, you know it's true, I love you best of all. So, honey, don't you go away. Now, just as he went to go, it grieved my heart. And so, these words he heard me say.
Darn, that's pretty. Some of these days, you're gonna miss me, honey. Gonna feel so. You'll miss my hug. You'll miss my kiss. You'll miss me, honey. When you go, lonely, lonely. I'm blue, blue, only, only for you, honey. Oh, you've had your way, and that ain't hay. And when you leave me, I know it will grieve me. You'll miss your little baby. I'm tired of being a scatterbrain. I'm gonna find myself a ball and chain. And when I do, you're gonna miss me. What's some of these days?
Judy Canova, that was swell. On our show of March 22nd, a very amusing man gave a lecture to sailors in which he discussed the facts of life. Apparently, he gave such valuable advice that you men have called him back for a second triumphant appearance on Command Performance. Robert Benchley.
Thank you, Miss Grable. This is a little talk that I'm going to deliver tomorrow to a group of young women about to enter a short course in nursing. I just want to see what you think of it. I don't know. I may tear the whole thing up anyway. Young ladies, I'm going to say, if I say anything. Young ladies, I am happy to speak a few words of cheer to you on this your day of matriculation. Perhaps I shouldn't even have said that. Perhaps I shouldn't have started the talk at all. If you can't say a word like matriculation without... Well, anyway, I do feel, however, that a word or two of warning may not be out of place from an old man who has been very close to several nurses and vice versa. I like to think of us all as just one big family, don't you? It's nice.
Yes.
First, there comes the problem of bathing in bed. I mean, of course, bathing the patient in bed. Well, let's look at it from another angle. Let's take the subject of changing the bedding after bathing the patient in bed. Now, as I see it, the problem is to get the bottom sheet out from under the patient without tossing him too far in the air or catapulting him on the floor on the other side. This can be done by calling his attention to something outside the window, counting one, two, three, and then not changing the bottom sheet at all. He won't know the difference in a couple of minutes anyway. So. Now, once you've got the patient washed and the bed linen changed, there is a question of... I wonder if you'd like to hear something about... something about the work we're trying to do among our boys up at our little camp in Silver Lake. I don't think it's generally known that most of our boys up there are between the age of 16. We feel that by taking the boy at this age, we can get him into closer touch not only with his parents, his school, and his and people, but also with the town in which he lives, the flag to which he pays allegiance, and to the town in which he lives. I was talking on this subject only last week at our uptown branch, asking for contributions for the camp. And at the conclusion of my talk, a little old lady, dressed all in lavender, came up on the platform and, placing her hand on my arm, asked, "What the hell did you do with all the money we gave you last year?" Well, I just laughed and pushed her off the platform. But I quote that only to show how much interest people are taking in our camp and how bright the future seems to be for it. Or did I say that? Well, anyway, to get back to what I was going to say to the young ladies who are training to be nurses. From my experience with nurses, I think that I'm right in making the suggestion that the nurse is likely to hang around the room too much. Is that right? I don't know. Nurses are often very charming young ladies. I say this entirely on hearsay. I never happened to draw one. I hear about these guys with beautiful nurses, but the one I usually get looks like whirl away with a cap on. Only kidding, Miss Tuttle. We now come to the subject of hospital bedroom equipment and its use. But I see that my time is about up. And so we shall have to postpone this section until our next meeting. Well, maybe the time isn't quite up yet, but it will be by the time I've announced that I will be in the vestry at the close of this talk for consultation with any of you young ladies who still want to continue nursing after what I've just said and who would like to try getting this shoulder of mine back into place. In the vestry, and this goes for you too, fellows. What have I said?
Thank you very much, Bob Benchley. And now for two sergeants and eight privates in the field artillery, APO 957, somewhere in the Pacific area, Command Performance presents the world's greatest trumpet player, Harry James, and his music makers. Into the mailbag now, we find a letter from the gang at the U.S. Naval Air Station, Coco Solo Canal Zone. It is signed by ACH, who says, "I suppose you're swamped with requests, and it will be some time before you get to mine, but I'll be waiting for Jack Benny." Well, ACH, suppose I refer your request to the heavyweight champion of microphonia, Don Wilson.
Thank you. Thank you, Betty. Thank you. Gosh, she's beautiful.
You said it.
And now, fellows, we bring you a man who used to be a beautiful baby, Jack Benny.
Say, Don, when I smiled at Harry James, you see how worried Phil Harris looked? Hello. Hello again. This is Jack Benny talking. And Don, I like that beautiful baby introduction. Was that just a lucky guess, or did you have authentic information?
Well, Jack, when I was over to your house for dinner the other night, I took a peek at that old family album of yours.
Oh, Don.
And I must say you were a gorgeous infant. Were you really so good looking?
Well, I don't want to sound hammy or anything like that, but for the first 17 months of my life, I was a length ahead of Robert Taylor. In fact, I won 4 blue diapers.
I can imagine.
Say, Don, I'll bet you were quite a healthy-looking kid yourself, weren't you?
Well, Jack, I don't...
I could just see you as a baby, Don, bouncing your mother on your knee.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I can hear your mother singing to you, "Rock-a-bye, baby, on the treetop."
Oh, she sure did.
That tree must have been a redwood. Well, anyway, I'd like to be a baby again. I really shouldn't keep talking like this, but I was about the cutest little Dickens in Waukegan. In fact, people from all around used to come to my father's meat market just to see me. You know?
Meat market? Why, I thought your father ran a clothing store.
Well, Don, it was a combination meat market and clothing store. On Saturdays, we used to run a special, a pound of hamburger with 2 pair of pants. Oh, went over very big. I remember one time...
Hello, Jack. What are you talking about?
We're talking about me. Don just happened to mention that he saw my family album and that I was a beautiful child.
You beautiful?
Yes, I was. Not only that, I developed very quickly. When I was only 3 months old, I had 4 lovely teeth.
Well, you're right back where you started from.
We should get laughs like that on our own show. Always killed me. Now, listen, Mary. I have a full set of teeth right now. And with the exception of a little argument I had with a cab driver in Toledo, they're all my own.
And what's that price tag doing on the 3rd molar?
Don't be funny.
Say, Jack, did I hear you say that you had an argument with a cab driver in Toledo?
Yes, but of course that was years ago.
Well, what was the fight all about?
Oh, nothing. He just happened to say something I didn't like, and he hit me. Otherwise, Toledo was lovely.
Say, Don, when you were looking through that album, did you see the picture of Jack's uncle on the big white horse?
Yes, I did.
That was my Uncle Beaumont, you know.
And did you see the tree in back with a rope dangling from it and that big crowd of men standing around?
Mary, my uncle didn't steal that horse. That was just a scene from a Western movie he was making called The Code of the West. What are you laughing at?
I'll bet he never saw the preview.
He did, and he was a fine actor.
Say, Mr. Benny.
Oh, hello. Hello, Dennis. I didn't see you.
Oh, I was around here. I heard you telling everybody what a beautiful baby you were.
Well, Don brought up the subject. Ida never mentioned it. Have you got any cute baby pictures, Dennis?
None where I'm facing the camera.
Oh.
You know, Mr. Benny, I wasn't a very pretty kid, but I was as smart as a whip.
Smart, eh? I'll bet you were.
All right, you can laugh, but when I was 12 years old, I recited the Gettysburg Address.
At 12? What's clever about that?
Could Lincoln do it?
All right, Dennis, we won't go into that. But if you were so smart at the age of 12, what happened to you in the meantime?
I don't know. All of a sudden, everything went blank.
That's what I thought. Say, where's Phil?
Oh, he's around here somewhere. By the way, Jack, I don't know whether I ought to tell you this or not, but Phil's pretty sore about that crack you made at rehearsal.
What crack?
You know, when you told him that if he didn't like it here, he could go out and get his own program.
Oh. Well, gee, Don, I was only kidding. I didn't mean anything.
Well, Phil took it pretty seriously, and he said he's going to leave you.
Leave me? Why, I made the guy. Gee, when I picked him up, he was demonstrating curlers in a drugstore window. Say, Mary,
Mary, did Phil say anything to you about this wild scheme of his?
Well, yes and no.
What do you mean, yes or no?
Yes, he told me, and no, I ain't gonna tell you.
I know. All right, I'm not worried about it. I can get another orchestra leader. What's the matter with Harry James? That's bad, I suppose? Anyway, Phil ought to be loyal enough to discuss things with me before he takes any definite step.
Hey, Jack, here he comes now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hello, Phil.
Hiya, Jackson. How's the boy?
Jackson. You know, Phil, it's cute the way you call me that every week, you know. Say, what's this gag I hear about you getting your own program?
It's not a gag. You and I have been fighting so much lately, I thought it'd be better to call it quits. That's all.
Oh, that's silly.
Silly nothing. You're just tough to get along with, that's all.
Who, me?
Yes, you. You're always flying off the handle.
I am not. I'm sweet and lovable.
And you're always yelling and shouting at me.
Shouting at you?
And you're always losing your temper.
Why, you baggy-eyed ingrate, I never lose my temper, and you know it. I love you, you louse.
Oh, sure.
Well... Now, listen to me, Phil Harris.
Gee, you think they were married.
Keep out of this, Dennis. Now, look, Phil, look. I'm not begging you to stay on this program.
Then get up off your knees.
I'm not on my knees. Anyway, Phil, there's no use arguing about it. You can't leave me because we've got a contract.
Some contract. I supply the orchestra, and when people throw money at us, I have to split it with you.
Oh, how often does that happen? Maybe once in a fortnight. And another thing.
Oh, Jack, what are you beefing about? If Phil wants to go, let him go.
Certainly.
You can get Abe Lyman to take his place.
Oh, that would be fine. Abe Lyman happens to be the cab driver that punched me in Toledo. That's all I need.
Say, Jack, you know a lot about music. Why don't you form your own orchestra?
Well, maybe I will. Say, I could organize a darn good swing band, believe me.
If you do, I got a swell name for it.
Never mind.
What is it, Mary?
Jack Benny and his Stinkolas.
Listen, Mary, I don't have to worry about getting a band together because Phil is only bluffing. If he went out on his own, where would he get a sponsor?
Don't worry about me. I've got a sponsor.
Oh, you have, eh?
Yeah, I'm going on the air for Macmillan's Corn Plasters.
Corn Plasters?
Yes, Corn Plasters.
Well, that fits. Half the time you're corny and the other half you're plastered. Anyway, Phil, if you're smart, you'd stay right here and try to be a little more... I'll answer it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Oh, you, what do you want?
Are you planning to come home for dinner tonight?
Well, certainly I am.
Well, if you want something to eat, you better bring some food home with you.
What are you talking about? There was plenty of food in the icebox when I left the house this morning. What happened to it?
In the which?
In the icebox. When I left this morning, it was just bulging with food.
Well, the swelling's going down now.
Rochester, did you throw another party this afternoon?
Well, come to think of it, a few of my friends dropped in for some tea and donuts.
Now, listen, if you just served tea and donuts, what happened to all those lamb chops?
Well, I ran out of donuts.
Yes?
So we bored holes in the chops and dunked them.
That's fine. Well, what happened to the big roast turkey that was in the icebox?
Oh, that. That was first prize in the bingo game.
Well, that's the last straw. Now, you just see that there's some food in the house when I get there.
Okay, goodbye.
Goodbye.
Oh, say, boss.
Now what?
As long as you're coming home, will you bring my fan mail?
Yes, I'll bring it. Goodbye. Darn, that Rochester eats me out of house and home. Well, that's all for us, fellas. Good luck and give them hell.
Well, fellas, old man time is giving us the high sign, and it looks like my blind date with you is just about over. And when a gal has been shown a good time, it's customary for her to express her appreciation by extending her date the courtesy of a goodnight kiss. I don't suppose a shortwave kiss can be very effective, but it's the best I can do right now. So here it is. Oh, Colonel. Well, fellas, if we didn't get around to answering your particular request this time, keep listening. Your letter is probably here in the bag. And take it from me, that battle you're fighting out there is in the bag, too. This is Betty Grable thanking you for the date and reminding you that Hollywood turns out a lot of pictures. But for you, Hollywood just turns out. Goodbye now.
We're getting those letters, men, and their orders to us because around here you're the GHQ. Keep on writing to the station to which you're listening, and Command Performance will fill your requests. And listen, fella, for a time there, the Axis was getting pretty cocky. Right now, their worry is khaki. See you later.
Command Performance USA from Armed Forces Radio, heard on May 7th, 1942, exclusively for the troops listening via that service. And that wraps this hour of variety on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden era. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. It's been a pleasure.